Better Leaders, Better Schools, episode number 23. Jordan.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
All teacher to teacher. So when, and especially after I've established this relationship, I have an immediate resource that I could call on for problems, where I can just bounce ideas off of my partner that I've worked with in the project, or others that I've developed through the network, where we can share ideas and learn from each other. And that immediacy is what makes it really powerful.
Hey, this is Daniel Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Better Leaders, are you looking to upgrade your leadership potential? I have another free gift for you. This one is a PDF which I call 15 Questions Guaranteed to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. Unlock your leadership potential now for free by texting UNLOCK NOW. That's all one word, no spaces, to 33444. Text UNLOCK NOW to 33444 for your free gift. 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Better Leaders, I need your help. I invest time, creativity, and money to bring you the blog and podcast whose sole purpose is to develop your leadership capacity. I'm asking you to take a more active role in the show. Will you become a sponsor and help me cover the cost of creating, producing, and hosting the blog and podcast? In the show notes, there is a link where it asks you to become a patron of the show. I'm asking you to donate anywhere between $1 to $5 a month to help offset the cost of creating, producing, and publishing Better Leaders, Better Schools. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. If you have gotten any type of value from this show and would like to invest in Better Leaders, Better Schools, then please click the Patreon link. If you can't financially support the show at this time, then please consider leaving a rating and review, which helps the podcast reach more listeners. Today's podcast is brought to you by Reclaiming the Classroom, a new book by Trenton Goebel. He argues that effective learning happens because of the relationship built between a teacher and a student, not due to government mandates and high-stakes testing. That's a fresh perspective, and I tell you, you need to check out this new book at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. And now it's time for some five-star reviews. Mel Abraham writes, "Boy, do we need this. Awesome show with great insights. Definitely a keeper." From Mel Abraham, the author of the number one bestseller, The Entrepreneur's Solution. What? Number one bestsellers are given ratings and reviews. Thank you, Mel, for checking out the show. I appreciate the time you put into it and appreciate your feedback. Better Leaders, Better Schools guest Ben Owens is a physics and math teacher at Tri-County Early College High School in Murphy, North Carolina, and a 2014 Hope Street Group National Teaching Fellow. He earned degrees in physics and mechanical engineering, respectively, from North Georgia University and the Georgia Institute of Technology. After a 20-year career with a multinational corporation at manufacturing and R&D locations across the U.S., he got his Master's of Arts in Teaching from Marshall University and then left the private sector in 2007 to teach in rural Appalachia. He is passionate about changing the status quo in education by better connecting the classroom to what happens in today's global knowledge-based economy. Ben is TCEC's lead teacher and coordinator of their project-based learning program. He is a Center for Teaching Quality virtual community organizer, as well as a member of the National Science Teachers Association, National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, and the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. So hey there, Ben. How's it going there, buddy?
It's going really well. How about you, Daniel?
Man, I'm so excited to be talking with you today, Ben. You know, we connected a few times now on what has become, I think, my favorite Twitter chat, which is hashtag lead up chat, Saturdays at 8:30 Central Standard Time. But you've had so much good stuff to say that has inspired me, challenged me. And then the other day, you needed some inspiration yourself to do some writing. So I challenged you, so a few other people, and you put out a really awesome article that you wrote called Scaling Pockets of teaching excellence continues growing in North Carolina. And so, again, on Twitter, you know, you were just thinking, how can we extend the reach of these pockets of excellence? And I said, well, Ben, hop on the podcast. I've got listeners in over 100 countries. Let's talk about what you're doing in North Carolina and share this with the world. So can you tell us a little bit about this article and obviously what you're doing in North Carolina?
Sure. Let me back up a little bit and kind of talk and put it into context. I came to teaching, this is my ninth year of teaching, and I spent 20 years in industry working for a multinational corporation, science company. And in that, when I was an engineer in industry, it was just a job expectation that we collaborated all the time. In every assignment I had, and from Tennessee, Alabama, California, West Virginia, in every case, when I got to a new assignment, one of the first things I did was build a network of peers that I could collaborate with. It was seen as a, you know, it was almost a business taboo in that industry to reinvent the wheel. If there is a problem that has been solved that you're dealing with, it was an expectation that you reach out and network with the folks who had worked on that particular problem. And oftentimes, you know, I would get tickets and jump on a plane and fly to wherever I needed to go, whether that was Boston or L.A. or Germany, whatever. It was considered business essential to do that level of collaboration. So when I came into the teaching profession, guess what? I didn't see that. I did not see the level of collaboration, certainly between schools, between districts. And I have to say, even just, you know, walking down the hall, collaborating with a peer next door, it was this, it seemed like a mentality in general, not to over-classify it here, but just in general, that everybody wanted to kind of do their own thing and kind of close the door and have at it. So that kind of, you know, put a burr under my saddle, so to speak, for all the years that I've been teaching. I've tried to address that issue as one of my pet peeves. In 2014, I was selected as one of 12 Hope Street Group National Teacher Fellows. And part of being a national fellow is you're expected to do some type of policy project that has district to regional or even statewide impact. I chose to work on this very issue, collaboration between peers so that we can improve professional development. So we kicked off a project in 2014-15 that involved four districts in Western North Carolina. And each district had two teachers that we set up partnerships with across district lines. And the expectation was that these teachers would spend at least one day going to a peer's classroom and just sit there and watch and listen and learn and then follow up that interaction with a discussion about what they saw, what they liked, what they wondered about. And then through that interaction and the follow-up, that would provide a means for a really good dialogue that would improve teaching skills and improve the application of best practices so that more schools, more teachers are exposed to them and helping students. So that's kind of the big picture idea of what this was all about in the initial pilot year. This year, in the article, what it was referring to, and I can certainly, and I'm sure you can point the listeners to the link to that article as well.
Absolutely.
This was talking about the phase two of this project, which involved, now we're dealing with seven districts and we've got 26 teachers on board. So we've had almost, 3X increase in number of participants. And unlike the original year, pilot year where we did STEM at the secondary level teachers, this is open to all teachers at all levels. And We just finished the kickoff at the North Carolina Center for the Advancement of Teaching here in Western North Carolina, and I'm truly excited about where this is going. And it's helping address, again, that fundamental issue that I talked about a few minutes ago, is getting teachers to collaborate with each other, getting professionals spending time with each other and truly learning best practices from each other.
So you said you're excited where this project is going. Where do you see it going?
Well, the immediate thing that I see is these 26 teachers that are involved are already some have already had their what I call the immersion sessions, and that's where the teacher will go and spend the time in the classroom. And this year, we are also using an online digital learning and collaboration platform called KickUp. And so it allows teachers to continue the discussion, via videos and sharing lesson plans and other resources. So we really want to emphasize the collaboration is not just, a one-time deal, but it's something that continues to inform their practice and help their students. And so what the immediate thing that I want to see is these teachers be really excited, which is what I'm seeing, about what's going on and share ideas with each other. I really believe that can have a significant impact back in the teacher's home school, where they can then take the ideas that they've learned from this and through existing PLNs, share the same type of information. We've modeled this this effort using the Learning Forward standards. I'm sure several listeners would be familiar with those, and if not, I would encourage you to go to just Google Learning Forward standards, and it's a wealth of information about how to do PLNs in the right way and follow up and really implement the learning.
Yeah, and listeners, you could obviously Google that, but we'll also link up Learning Forward standards in the show notes as well. So, Ben, you mentioned this thing called KickUp. Is that a website or a app, or what is that?
It's actually it's a new company, and they're a startup. It's kickup.co. Again, we can link that, I'm sure, to the program. And they have agreed to be a partner in this phase of the work. It's not exactly like a Yelp for educators, but it's in that direction, I would venture to say. It allows me to kind of set up a profile and then reach out to other teachers that have similar issues that I can work on. So in this case, we have our cohort of the 26 Pocket of Excellence teachers, as we're called, that have begun that face-to-face interaction that we did at the North Carolina Center for the Advancement of Teaching, or NCAT, as it's called short. So we began with the kickoff there, and then the KickUp platform is what we're using to then continue that discussion on an ongoing basis.
So, Ben, I got a two-part question here for you.
Sure.
Based on your experience as an engineer in industry, what did you learn about building networks? Because you said it was basically just something that was expected to collaborate, over problems and see, mm-hmm. Especially if people have already encountered those problems, how you could solve it in a quicker manner. But then part two of the question is, sometimes teaching, as you found, can be a very isolated and siloed, just fact of life within our schools. Within our schools, or you mentioned within our districts, within our state, within our nation. So the second part of this question is, how do you combat that independent, sort of working on your own, isolated viewpoint?
Right. Well, certainly when I was in industry, because it was just ingrained in the culture, regardless of one's experience, I remember coming in as a brand new engineer right out of school, college. And, I was immediately set up with mentors, formal and informal, and you name it, whatever issue that there was a way, and this was back in the days before the internet and things like that. So, you know, I had a old Rolodex, and some people may be familiar with what that is if they're my age. Otherwise, they may not. But it was this set of contacts that you name a problem, whether that was pumps or heat exchangers or distillation columns or process control, whatever it was, I had resources that I could call on. And that was both within the corporation as well as outside the corporation that I work for. And it was just all about this intense sharing of ideas to improve the whatever issue that we were dealing with, you know, improve quality or improve the reliability of the process, whatever it was. So that was just kind of what I became accustomed to. It was the MO that I used to do my work and do it effectively over the 20 years that I worked in industry. And contrast that to when I came into education, almost a reluctance. It was as if we were competing against one another, I felt. Where, you know, if I knew something, you know, if I had developed it, I was going to, you know, hold on to it, hold my cards really close to my chest and not really share that, because if I share it with you, maybe your rating might go up and mine won't. Or I don't know what the mentality was, but it just struck me as odd that we would have this competitive nature. And let me say that, you know, I'm not trying to characterize this as something that is happening in every school. I know this is an overgeneralization, but the contrast, I will say, from my experience of having worked in locations across the country in industry, and then when I came to into education, and I'll go to conferences all across the country, and just sense that, you know, there's this reticence to want to share information. I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation with a colleague at a conference or at another school or whatever, taking on project-based learning, for example. I developed my own PBL for my physics and my math classes, and I'll just say, well, here, you know, just I'll give you access to my Google Drive where I have all my projects stored, and you can take whatever you want. And it's almost like you're not serious, because why would you want to give away the things that you have spent all this time developing? And I'm like, well, it's for the students. It's to help you better engage your students. And if what I have developed will help you do that, go for it. I actually do say there's only one criteria that when I share stuff like that, is they've got to feed back to me and tell me what I can do to make it better. Sure. But, That's my only criteria.
So, how do we get people though to have that disposition that you have, where it's a perspective of abundance, right? It's not a finite amount of resources. You're not worried about other educators getting higher ratings than you. Like you said, it's all about the students and helping them be successful. So how do we shift that mindset that we see that can be prevalent in education?
Well, I think it all comes down, in my view, to a culture that you create at your school, that then gets noticed and other schools, other districts will want to try to emulate that. And, you know, and that's why I was so excited about, you know, getting on this podcast and having a chance to kind of be a little bit of an education evangelist, so to speak. And just, you know, it's the things that you're helping bring to the table by having this type of vehicle to just give us a forum where we can get this message out to people to understand that we've got to make a change to the status quo. And if the status quo is I'm going to essentially create a lot of little one-room schoolhouses within a big school building, that's got to change. And so what I do, for example, at my school, I'm so excited to talk about is we have a shared leadership with a principal there who has a strong vision of collaboration and that and embodying that shared leadership. So, you know, we have set up a schedule such that we as a staff, all the teachers there meet twice a week. Now, we're a relatively small school, 140-something students, with six teachers and a principal. But we all meet with shared voice twice a week to talk about what we can do to improve. And that just intense collaborative environment makes working there an absolute joy. And it spreads to the students because how can I tell my students in a PBL environment to collaborate and share ideas and do exactly what I was seeing in industry? And I want them to develop that critical skill that's going to make them be able to collaborate when they get into the workforce or when they go to the university setting. So I've got to be able to model that, and we as a staff model that on a daily basis at my school. So I think modeling it, and then, you know, through forums like this and through blogging and through, I mean, that's why I titled my project originally Scaling Pockets of Excellence is, I think, you know, it's like a ripple effect. If I started with eight teachers last year and now they have a strong sense of the power of collaboration and what it does to their own personal growth. Now those eight are out spreading that message. And now I've got 26 that are involved in this work this year that are doing the same thing. So what I want to see is that we just kind of change the entire education ecosystem so that this is, like it was in industry, a basic expectation. When you teach, you collaborate with peers relentlessly.
You know, and do you think those eight teachers that went through the pilot program, their positive experience, is that what 3X'd the participation in the second year?
I think so. That and the other people who noticed. I mean, we developed a level of credibility. So the superintendents that were involved with those original districts, when I posed the idea of doing a second phase, because at the time it was, I really didn't have to do the second phase, as I alluded to in the article. I had essentially, you know, fulfilled my obligation as the Hope Street Fellowship, but I couldn't let this die. I didn't want it to become a footnote in the Education Chronicles here in North Carolina. I wanted this to truly catch fire, and that's what I'm passionate about making sure happens. So the way it was able to scale up from 8 to 26 and from 4 districts to 7 districts was because we had a credible case. We could point to things that changed. Schools that were not doing PBL, for example, before and now were, that weren't doing student-centered discovery and inquiry-based education and now were. And with that level of credibility, we were able to get other people on board and excited about this work. And that's ultimately what I hope happens, is that enough do that this becomes a sustainable expectation and not just a project that's led by Ben, but it's just an expectation of something that we do for excellence here in North Carolina, and ideally that it spreads to the rest of the state, the region, or, you know, anybody could pick up this model and do it anywhere in this country.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the book Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goebel. Have you ever looked around and wondered, how do we get to this crazy position that education currently finds itself? Well, the book Reclaiming the Classroom provides a roadmap for teachers to get back to a position of power and respect, and offers administrators advice on how to support and encourage their efforts. Listen, Teachers are the single greatest source of innovation in the classroom, and real change can only happen through teacher-led initiatives. This book, Reclaiming the Classroom, offers a path for teachers to regain this position as the nation's experts on student learning and success. Pick up the book today at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. The Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. For more great education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, back to our show. So, Ben, as you participated in this project that you're leading, either in the pilot year or the second year, can you get a little granular about maybe one of your key takeaways visiting another classroom? You said that you guys will share what you liked about what happened in a lesson, what kind of wonderings you have about the lesson as well. Can you give a specific example of visiting a class that, you know, really impacted you through the past 2 years?
Sure. What I will do in the project that I did last year, I was not one of the participating teachers. I was too busy coordinating the overall work.
Gotcha.
This year, however, I am one of the participating teachers. I actually wanted to, you know, get my feet on the ground and see what it's like to actually do that and not just tell other people to do it. but I will say that that model comes from what we have implemented back at my school, and we're using the Critical Friends protocols, and that's through the emphasis through North Carolina New Schools has had. We've had training for that where we will go as peers into each other's classrooms, and we have done that dozens and dozens of times where we will follow the protocol, sit in. The teacher will first tell us, the teacher we're visiting will first tell us, all right, these are the things I want you to kind of look for. And this is completely non-evaluative, and it's just where you go and sit and you watch the students. You watch their level of engagement. And based on what the teacher has originally said to look for, that's exactly what you look for. And then you leave them with feedback based on what you noticed. Just recently I spent, an entire class period, in one of my colleagues who's a history teacher, and they were doing, some PBL scaffolding. And so I came in and I just watched the level of engagement, around the lesson, that he had given me a heads up about. And so I was able to provide my colleague with some excellent feedback that he was able to then use and tweak what he was doing to make his student-centered classroom a bit better. But the really cool thing is I was able to see him using some strategies, grouping strategies and some of the questioning techniques that he was using that were really cool that I had not thought of before, especially in the regard to reaching a couple students that I may have had difficulty reaching in the past. Now I've got some strategies I can take back, and bam, it's just like gold that I can immediately implement and make me a better teacher.
That's incredible. So I love that. I guess that immediacy where you grab strategies, you know, from a peer and then was able to implement that that day or, you know, the next day in your class.
Exactly. And that's what I guess kind of the underlying theme here is. It's not just about the collaboration. Mm-hmm. It's about how do I grow as a teacher? And in the traditional PD sense, you know, I grow as a teacher by going to some seminar, sitting and listening to someone rattle off for, you know, half day, full day, whatever. Come home with a big fat notebook of stuff and it goes and it sits on a shelf. That, you know, may work sometimes. And I have been to some good workshops, but by and large, that model of professional development is outdated. And what is really cool about this effort and the framework we've designed is it's all teacher to teacher. So when, and especially after I've established this relationship, I have an immediate resource that I can call on for problems, where I can just bounce ideas off of my partner that I've worked with in the project, or others that I've developed through the network, where we can share ideas and learn from each other. And that immediacy is what makes it really powerful.
Yeah, so I think I got a good idea now of what you're talking about in the article and what you've been doing over the past 2 years. This PD that's led by teachers, for teachers, by teachers. Mm-hmm. It's this a visiting of classrooms with a very curious mind, and then the follow-up conversations and regular meetings that occur as a result. So it's not like this on March 15th we're meeting and my peers are presenting to me, but it's this continuous learning process of visiting, discussing, tweaking, and repeating.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And that's what, and I would submit that's what any professional, it's not just education, it's not just engineering.
Sure.
This is what doctors do. This is what architects do. This is what any true professional has to be humble enough to realize that I don't know everything. And the only way I'm going to learn is really not going to work in isolation. The best way for me to learn is to share ideas with colleagues that have been there, that have experienced things that I haven't, and learn through that. And that's, I think we just have to do more of that in education.
Yeah, now listeners, though, that was Ben's opinion that you don't know everything. Okay, that's not from Daniel. No, I'm just kidding. You know, we don't know everything, and we need to be open-minded and say, you know, teach me, to a teacher that just started, right? Or the veteran, like, we can learn from everybody. I love what you're doing, this work in North Carolina. It sounds very similar to what we do at our school. And you mentioned other professions. We studied a text that I think is out of Harvard, but they created something called instructional rounds that's based off the medical profession. And we'll link that up in the show notes too, so people can check that out. But it's a very similar process where teams of teachers get together, they visit classrooms, they all look for the same, what they call problem of practice. And then they come try to just talk about what they saw, again, what wonderings, what questions they had, and then the implications for our practice. So that's a very, you know, general overview of instructional rounds. I encourage people to check out the book to dive in if that's something that they want to dig into. So, Ben, let me ask you this. As the leader of this excellent professional development for teachers by teachers, with the Better Leaders, Better Schools audience, we really like to learn from our mistakes. So implementing the pilot program, what's one thing you wish you may would have done differently in terms of leading this pilot or how you rolled it out that could have been better? What was a mistake that you made that you wish you could change?
Sure. Well, we actually did revamp one key element from the original pilot to what we're doing this year.
Great.
Last year, we set up the premise that out of the four districts that were involved, that we would pick whether you want to call it a veteran teacher or you know, a seasoned professional, whatever, someone that was just at the top of their game. And that was at the time we identified that as the pocket of excellence teacher. And then we also identified either a relatively new teacher or someone who just, based on their situation, had never had the opportunity to do really engaging project or problem-based learning or inquiry-based. And again, this was for in the STEM curricular areas, so that's where we were focusing. And we called that teacher an emerging innovator, and those were the two terms we used. What we found out, and I think you alluded to it earlier, was the master teacher, as it were, the pocket of excellence teacher, was saying when we did our debrief that, hey, I learned just as much from this teacher who may have been right out of school or, you know, 2 years into the profession or had just been in a very traditional environment for their entire career with no real emphasis on teaching and learning best practices. But I learned just as much from he or she than they did from me. And that realization was an eye opener. And so this year we have abandoned those titles and just said everybody in the cohort is deemed a pocket of excellence. And they have something to bring to the table regardless of their experience, regardless of the environment they've been in. And the beauty of the kickoff that we had was we spent a lot of time developing that relationship, which is a whole other piece we can get into. We as educators know the essential for me to be able to reach my students, I've got to first start with developing that strong relationship and trust. And so we took the same approach here, where we spent the time up front through team building exercises and just getting to know each other and develop that relationship and trust. That probably was the biggest change that we were able to recognize and make this year. And I think we're off to a better start because of it.
You know what I love about what you shared there, this idea of removing the label and making everybody a pocket of excellence, a pocket of greatness.
Right.
You have, you know, at this point, I bet you can't even see the dividends that's already paying, right? By freeing that up and almost labeling someone as an excellent teacher that never thought of themselves as excellent or has something to teach others. It's just a beautiful thing. In an interview that will be released that I did with a student leader, I was talking with my wife, actually, who led this student group, and it was just such a profound thought. She thought that she unlocked his leadership capacity when she asked him to give this fairly big speech in front of a 500 person auditorium. But he said, no, Erica, that's not when you unlocked my leadership. It's when you asked me just to send an email to my peers, holding them accountable for being somewhere at a certain time. And he was given voice for the first time. So I'm so excited that you took those labels away and made everybody a pocket of greatness, because some people I know are stepping it up, right? Raising their level of instruction because you pronounce that over them. And that's a beautiful thing, Ben. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. Right. And it was consistent with our when we did the training for the project initially. One of the key points was we told everybody in the cohort that you are not just a teacher, you're a teacher leader. And part of the expectation of this project is that you recognize that this level of collaboration with other teachers in your building, in your department, in your district, and in your across the board, and using social media and whatever, is always having your voice out there, always recognizing that there's something else that I can learn to make me better. And it's my job to find that and collaborate with whomever that is, whether it's next door or me sitting on Twitter, tweeting about something with a colleague in Australia. If I can grow and learn and share in that format, then we're all doing what we need to truly do to impact students and change their lives.
Absolutely. So in terms of building relationships, I know you mentioned team building. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, I know people are going to want to do and emulate what you're doing there in North Carolina, Ben. So is there a team building activity that you could specifically share that's really worked? Or do you have any other insights in terms of what really worked for you guys in terms of building those relationships?
Oh, yeah. When we first met, of course, these 26 teachers came in, many of whom had never met each other. So we just started with just really, kind of the typical, brief introductions. But we did it in smaller groups. We didn't, sit everybody around and go around the room, because that would have taken an enormous amount of time. I just posed various questions, that would allow them to begin to open up and have a dialogue. I had a list of quotes from educators that we passed around the room, and everybody kind of gravitated to a single quote that they used then for the rest of the and we did this over a 2-day period. And they kind of used that as to kind of embody who they were based on that quote. We did some things like, you know, your typical things that you see, you know, I had them use marbles and some pipe that I had cut in half, and their goal was to follow kind of a torturous path that I had created maliciously, I might add, to get the marble into a cup.
Okay.
And then I would randomly go in and blindfold people or say, you can't talk anymore.
Right.
And just always changing the scenario. So, you know, stuff like that, that got them laughing, got them thinking together, got them solving problems. And, you know, some people will say, well, you know, why are you wasting time doing stuff like that? That's silly. It really isn't. It really, when it's done in an effective manner, and this was, again, at the beautiful facilities at NCAT, and I would encourage especially any listeners in North Carolina, if they haven't been there, to go. It's a wonderful facility, and it's just enabling us as educators to be professionals, be in a space where we can really let go and truly develop that relationship and that trust, and that is so, so vitally important.
Mm. If there's principals or teacher leaders that want to start this type of project in their district, in their school, what would you say to them?
I'd say go for it. I would say if you, you know, it doesn't have to be as elaborate perhaps as this, but using some resources like what you mentioned with the classroom rounds, with the critical friends, you know, look at your PLNs and say, you know, are they in name only, or are they truly functioning as they should? Are we really sharing? And if not, use the learning forward standards to help improve the game there. You know, look at the article that I wrote, and you know, feel free to contact me. I can certainly point people in the right direction there, as to give them some tips and ideas. This isn't that hard. I mean, yeah, getting it kicked off was, you know, my day job is teaching math and physics to high school students. So it was a bit challenging for me. But, you know, there are people out there who want to see this type of collaboration happen, who recognize the true benefit of doing something like this. And when you can get that critical mass of people together thinking about it, it's going to happen. And so my challenge to principals or teachers or whomever out there is find those like-minded people who want to see something like this, start a network, start small, but make it happen. Don't allow, we have never done something like this before, hold you back. We've got to be doing things differently if we really want to prepare our students for that real world out there, that they're going to be expected to collaborate and share ideas and be entrepreneurs. And that's not going to come from students sitting in rows and reading out of a textbook and answering the questions in the back. Those days are long, long gone. And whatever we got to do to collaborate with each other to share better practices, it needs to happen.
Okay, so let's move into some quick fire questions. Your answers, you sure. know, you can go in depth, but I'm just going to throw them out there. Okay. How do you balance work life and family? You have any tips for us?
I read a book back in the 80s called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. You may have heard of it by Covey. It has become life changing. I truly try to balance everything. And are there days or a couple days where I don't do a good job of that? Of course. But in general, I'm able to do my job, do it very well, but also have a truly wonderful life outside of what I do. And, it's, you know, I pinch myself sometimes because I'm living in a beautiful area. I've got a fabulous wife, no kids, but four cats and a dog. you know, I'm backpacking, kayaking, and hiking in the beautiful Appalachian Mountains here in Western North Carolina. So it's it's truly great. And I get to be doing things like this and being trying to make more of an impact in education. So it works for me. And it all comes down to, you know, keeping my priorities and using the four quadrants that Covey recommended all those years ago.
Right. So that's a question I like to ask people oftentimes is what's a book every school leader should read right now? And is that what you would suggest, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People?
Yeah, that's a foundational book that everybody needs to read. Indeed. It's a classic.
Tell me your cats and dogs' names.
Let's see. Scooter Ray, Diego, and let's see, I'll make sure. Lolo. That was the yellow cat we wanted to give away, and nobody got it, so we just eventually called him Lolo. And then Gatto, Italian for cat.
Right.
And our dog's name is Flannery, out of homage to my favorite author.
Flannery O'Connor.
You got it.
I'm an English major, so I should know that one. I get my points. I earned my degree.
There you go.
So what do you do for fun, Ben?
Well, like I said, I kayak. Yep. It's a little bit chilly right now, but I do have a sea kayak. I run a lot. I do long distance cycling. That's one of the true benefits of being a teacher that I'd never got to do before, is having a couple months off in the summer. So I've done cycle trips across Europe,
wow,
across a large swath of the U.S. Did Sydney to Brisbane back a couple years ago. So that's what I love to do when I'm not having fun with students in a classroom.
Yeah, did I see you do some marathons as well? Is that on?
Yeah, I'm on. I need to sign up for my 18th this spring, so I need to do that. Prove that I can do one after 50.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've seen some guys too that they turn that big 5-0 and they go run a 50-mile race. So I don't know if you have any aspirations of that. I've done 2 marathons myself. I was injured for my third this year, so I had to bow out. But it's been a, you know, just great thing in terms of, you know, building up your own strength and I think perseverance and character, that sort of thing. Where's the best place you've run a marathon? Favorite race?
Probably my favorite was I think it was 2003, the New York City Marathon.
Okay.
That was absolutely wonderful. Probably close second would be Big Sur out in California.
Sounds good. Big Sur, beautiful place. Jack Kerouac wrote a wonderful book about that area.
Yeah, I've read it.
Want to move there for sure.
Yeah.
Who's one person you'd like to meet, either past or present?
I would like to have a chance to meet my dad again. He never got to see me become a teacher. He was a college professor for many years, served as the chairman of the board in the little town I grew up in, Northeast Georgia. But he never saw this side of me, and I would love more than anything to be able to sit down with him. He died, unfortunately, of a heart attack in 2004. Mm. He never got to see this side of my life, which has been so rewarding. That's the one that comes to the top of my mind.
Yeah, sorry for your loss. I know he'd be proud of you, though, that's for sure.
Thanks.
Is there a tech resource that you leverage at work that helps you be more effective?
Well, our entire school has gone Google Classroom this year.
Okay.
And I've just been turned on to one of these sessions with our, you know, peer-to-peer network there at the school. We said, well, hey, let's learn how to use Doctopus with Goobric. And that has been, you know, where have you been all my life, I guess was my comment, because it was it has truly allowed me to really give immediate feedback to students. And that's been one of my kind of things that just keeps bugging me, is how can I make the feedback that I provide to the students be more relevant and timely?
Mm.
And that has really allowed me to do that, where I can, you know, and we do a competency-based environment, so I can always give them tips and pointers about, you know, things that they can do to improve their growth.
I love what you're saying there too. I think Marzano's research and some other folks as well have shown that the most important thing a teacher can do is have that timely feedback that points students in the direction of what to do to improve, to get better, to become a master in whatever content or skill you're exposing them to. So I love how you're leveraging Google Classroom to make that happen for the kids.
Right.
So Ben, this is my favorite question that I ask folks. You know, I asked you in the pre-interview to make sure that you're prepared, but you are building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you create this school, Ben, if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Well, what the school would look like is what my current school looks like. But my current school, I teach out of a mobile unit, or as we here in North Carolina call it, a trailer. and I have, you know, I've through grants of $200 here, $500 here, I've kind of cobbled together some things that I use in my discovery inquiry-based type of classroom. But they're all, you know, one of this or one of that. But just, you know, it doesn't come down to the facilities or the materials that you have or textbooks that are 10 years old, which I don't even use anyway. It's all about the culture you establish. So I would, you know, if money were no object, I would have a really nice facility where that didn't look anything at all like a school, that looked more like just a place where creativity can occur. And, you know, all the cool architecture and things like that. But the heart of the school would essentially be the heart of the school that I work in today, which is an environment where there's shared leadership, where we base it on a PBL environment, where we're trying to ensure that the students 100% of the time are engaged in things that they care about and it's relevant to their lives, not abstract concepts that they're thinking, why am I doing this and what's the impact on my life? Where we're, you know, doing a competency based where it's not, you know, if you don't learn it by this time, sorry, you don't get it.
Right.
So that, and like I have alluded to on this interview, that sense of strong collaboration between the peers, where we're constantly sharing ideas with one another and helping each other grow, because we recognize that it's only through that collaboration where we truly bring something to the table to share or listen to how I can be a better teacher that I'm going to better be able to impact these student lives. And working in a, you know, place of, you know, it's rural Appalachia, we have our issues to deal with in that context. So it makes me proud to know that I teach at a place that's taking students that may not have this, you know, when I go to graduation and see students who this is the first degree, whether that be college or high school, it's the first degree that family has seen that they're a part of. I just can't help but weep. So I just know that we're having an impact like that, and it's just a really cool thing.
Ben, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what is the best way to get a hold of you?
Follow me on Twitter. Send me a direct message that way. Probably the easiest way. And I'm the at Engineer Teacher is my Twitter handle, so you can do that. And I guess words of advice is don't let we've always done it this way, hinder you from doing what you know is best for your students. Strive for excellence every day, regardless of what it is, and make it happen.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Ben. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Ben in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get highlights of today's episodes, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect with Ben. If you have an iPhone, tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Ben, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel.
Absolutely. Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.